Hello and welcome to Talking Together, Learning Together, Growing Together with me, Ali McClure, and my special guest tonight, Philippa Aldous. Philippa is a lived experience expert in all sorts of neurodiversities. As the parent of three fabulous boys who have got a cocktail of neurodiversities amongst them, but sensory processing is something very close to Philippa's heart. So the aim of these sessions is to have a discussion as experts and then to leave you with some strategies to empower you in talking together, learning together, and growing together with your children. Welcome, Philippa.
Thank you, Ali. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And thank you for coming along. It's so fabulous. And it's a little while since we've had the opportunity to have a really good conversation around children. We've both got boys, but this could be children of boys, girls, or anyone in between. It's just about individuals. So our title today is Anticipation, Behaviour, Christmas. That ABC. Anticipation, behaviour, Christmas. So what does Christmas mean to all of us? Now, if you're listening in, Christmas will mean different things to you. It may be that you don't celebrate Christmas, but you just take on board some of the activities around it. But Philippa, what does Christmas mean to you?
To me, as a parent of special needs children, I'll say as an individual, I love the lights, I love the excitement, I love the people that I haven't seen for a while. I love getting together with family, friends, parties. However, as a parent of children with needs, Christmases have looked a bit different.
Oh.
And that is because of all of the things that I love about Christmas actually serves to be triggers for them and actually are things that make them struggle with the Christmas and what comes with that.
Oh my goodness, I'm just going to take a little step off your journey for a moment because we may have people who are listening in who have children who don't have any particular or specific special educational needs, but any child can have these triggers which impact on their behaviour, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I can in a minute explain sort of some of the diversities that are in my family. And I like that word cocktail. But I think that's absolutely right. I personally don't I think labels are useful, but we are talking about individuals. And I think whether it's one diagnosis does not necessarily bring about certain triggers and behaviors. They're not consistent with a diagnosis. It can be a mix. So really, for me, it's putting those labels aside and looking at your child. And I mean, in my house, all three are different, and they all have different triggers. So I would say very much that it's about knowing your child, and it can be any, absolutely, it can be a neurotypical child or a child with neurodiversity.
That's fabulous. So it does make us step back and think that I'm looking forward to putting up my lights. I like all the different foods. We'll have music playing. We'll welcome people around and we'll go to different places. There'll be different smells. There'll be different timings. There'll be so much change. In the work that I've been doing recently, I've been working on an approach which is called the fingertips approach, which is tools to talk about learning, the tools to learn through talking. And this is a very simple approach. I'll share a little of it with you later on. But there are roots beneath the surface. And I think that's one of the things we're looking at today. And one of those roots is change. It's actually in the soil around the roots. And if there's change, teachers will call it transition, but there are transitions all the time going on at Christmas. How can these impact for any particular child, Philippa? Can you give us an example or two of how some of these triggers might impact?
Yeah, so I mean, I can give you an example which impact of sort of a transition and how that can be seen in the behaviour. So an example will be a knock at the door. someone delivering a Christmas card. Okay, so knock at the door. So it was not known that that person was going to come to the door, that it was going to come with a Christmas card. It was unknown by the parent or by the child. Knock at the door, depending upon the knocker, or whether it's a bell, they themselves can be noisy. We have a very old knocker, and it's very, very loud. Certainly if a gentleman would bang. So you open the door, and the child is then perhaps in another room, will rush through and will be, and this is where it does differ with children. You can have a child that is very clingy to the parent, or you can have a child that is absolutely jumping around trying to get into the face of the person that has come around, maybe, touching them,
Maybe
and
getting a bit too close.
maybe getting absolutely, yes, absolutely too close and inappropriate in terms of perhaps possibly if they don't know that person. So, and all that's going on whilst two adults perhaps are having a conversation of,
Or trying to.
here's your Christmas card. But those two different behaviours mean the same thing, and that is that child is that. The fact that someone has turned up at their door has created anxiety in that child, but it can be seen in very many different ways.
Gosh. So the title of our session tonight is Anticipation Behavior Christmas. Is there anything that you could do in the run up to Christmas, knowing that your child may respond in that way? Is there anything that you can do to anticipate that situation and use part of a strategy which I found to be successful? I should actually come step aside and share a little of the context that I come from. Many people listening will know, but I'm also the parent of three neurodiverse boys, but with different cocktail. We were talking about cocktails before we came on, and different cocktails of neurodiversities. But also, I'm a special needs coordinator in a little school, and I work with lots of children who have neurodiversities and parents who may have anxieties or real desire to make things right, make things good for their child. So I also have the privilege of working with a fabulous education psychologist who, about 20 years ago, was writing strategies for our local authority. She was with me on a course last Tuesday, actually. And one of the strategies that she wrote a number of years ago, before we knew so many things, was anticipation behavior consequence. Now, this is still used in a lot of schools, but the lady who wrote it has now moved on from that. And the strategy that I'm going to share with you today is what she and I have come to as a more positive alternative. So the strategy that we use and she now uses in her practice is three A's to start with: anticipate, avoid, and adapt. Now, for parents who are interested, I will tell you what the end two letters are, but we're not going to dive into those today. They are respond and repair. And that's a whole day's workshop to go through all of those. But if you take those first three A's, anticipate and possibly avoid and adapt, how would you anticipate that situation that you described, Philippa? How would you deal with that with your?
With younger children, we often use a word called whoops. It's a one word where we simply just by saying the word, it means, and it means that this is an event that we couldn't prepare or plan for, and this is okay. So that one word will put that child at ease.
Well, I love the fact that you've clarified it by saying this is unforeseen, but it is okay. And feeling safe and behaving in a safe way are two of the key things that I use with the children that I work with. So you saying whoops would help your child to begin to feel safe.
I think that is probably the most important. I think if I may just take a moment to talk about Maslow's needs, which
Absolutely.
possibly we've all remembered in our childhood and in our perhaps at school many, many years ago. But I think children with anxiety, whether diagnosed or not, I mean, I've just given an example of an anxiety-provoking situation as a result of a transition, and all a child needs at that moment in time is to feel safe. And where do they get that safety from? That can happen through knowing what is coming around the corner, being prepared for it. But the most important thing is knowing that their carer, their main carer, parent or otherwise, has got them, and they're with them, and they are a team, and they're going to be okay. And
And
I think
that leads me to a word which is connection, and
yes.
a phrase that I heard many years ago when I first became a Senko from a lady who, very, very wise woman, who adopted children. And she first said to me, there's no correction without connection. So there's got to be that trust. We, as the adults around the children, and that's as parents or as educators or as carers, we need to have a really strong human connection with that child and know the ins and outs of some of the things, some of those little subtleties that other people might not see. And an example of that, not at Christmas, that we used to see in one little boy that I was working with, I was tutoring, was that if he was chewing his sleeve, he would begin to chew his sleeve. You know that deep down he's actually feeling really anxious. And then we would need to be alert to make sure that he's got the things around him that are going to make him feel safe.
But I think that's a really so on it on I can perhaps explain a little bit more about what that child was doing. So actually, they were using an oral strategy to actually make them feel calmer, or make them more so that they can be present in the room if they were in a classroom listening, what have you. So actually, they were giving them their body what they needed. And what can happen, which can happen from a parent or from a teacher, is will you stop sucking on your sleeve? Leave it alone. So, something that I would like to impart is that actually is looking at the behavior of the child, and actually saying, which you've said, is to recognize it, that well done, Johnny. I can see that you need something to chew. So that's fine. So you validated that feeling. Then you can say, but actually, I'm going to find you something else that would be far better than your sleeve that is becoming shorter and shorter. But you're saying to them, well done, you've told me that, I can see that you're needing something. And then you give them what it is that they need, and that is usually something that's alerting, so crunchy. My child, when someone used to come to a door, particularly at Christmas time, he'd run straight to the freezer and he'd get an ice lolly or ice cubes. And I had pictures on the fridge, and because after meal times he would still open the fridge door, and I knew he'd had enough food. And this is where food can be perceived as a sign that they're hungry. Most of the time they're not. So I just reduced my language, and I used visuals, and I had pictures of ice cubes and carrots on the fridge. And every time he went to open the fridge door, I put my hand on the fridge door and pointed at the pictures. And I'd repeat, I can see that you want something that is calming. Here you go. And that took time,
When did you start that?
four to six. That was a crucial time. But that was because because I was learning to look at the body, learning to look at his body and what he was doing. So an example would be coming home from school and picking up tin and throwing it about his head. And
Picking up a
for
tin,
me,
what
it
kind of a
was
tin?
paint
Oh,
tin.
paint tin, sorry, we missed that one, yes.
Okay, paint. It was heavy, it was dangerous. All
Yes.
right. So I very quickly ran in and say, I can see that you need something heavy. That is dangerous. That's not okay to use that. Let's go and find something else that is okay. So I was watching him. And now, had I gone on in, and we've all done it, and said, "Will you put that down? What are you doing?" Then it becomes what you might expect and what nobody wants, and that is to have a conflict. And
Absolutely.
that's
That's a bit of a
not,
head to head, isn't it?
and that doesn't achieve anything for anyone, and it does lose connection with your child. So
Absolutely.
it's things like that that can be very, very useful.
That's, there's so much depth in that little story there. And what I like is I was pretty sure before we got on our call tonight that we would be on the same page. You're using your adapt strategy there, and a strategy that I used to use a lot. I will share. But I don't share generically these days because I try not to use strategies that can be misinterpreted. Sometimes people take things and they take them like stickers, and I'm going to use that sticker. This strategy comes from Hannon, which is a group in Canada, and it is allow, adapt, add. So if your child is spinning the paint tin, somebody who hasn't had the opportunity to discover the depth that you have might think, oh my goodness, that weird woman Ali McClure is telling me to allow them to swing a paint tin around their head. That's dangerous. How stupid is she? But rather than that, it's actually unpicking the details. It's unlocking our learning from what they're showing us. So they're showing us that they need, as you said, something heavy. I wonder whether that child also needs something that spins or rotates. Was that part of it as well, or was it the weight?
Well, so spinning is linked to a sense. So everyone will be familiar with the senses of touch, of smell, of taste, and hearing. There's two others that, unless you're in this world, won't necessarily be familiar with. So forgive me if I'm
Yeah.
if people are aware, but there's two. One is vestibular and one is proprioception. And vestibular is awareness of our head in space. And it's linked to the sense of alertness. So where a child might spin on the spot or spin round, and but it is definitely in answer to your question, it's more of where our head is. So the head needs to spin. I'm not sure whether that would create the same feeling. I'm not sure, but if he was to run around in circles, that would be creating
Yeah.
that. And then there's proprioception, which is awareness of our body in space. So, for instance, when you're in a classroom or at the dinner table, and a child who is constantly moving on their chair, perhaps sliding off their chair or standing up, is because they are needing to know that where the chair is. You and I both know that our bottom is touching the chair, and I don't need to remind myself. But some children that they do. But proprioception is also linked to calmness. So your best state for a sensory state for a classroom or for anything, particularly social activity at Christmas, is to be calm and alert. So, and that's the activation of both the vestibular and proprioception.
That's fabulous. And recently, I learnt of a third that ends inception, and I knew of it, but I didn't realise that it was one of those things that we need to look out for beneath the surface, and that's interoception. And that's knowing if we are tired, if we are hungry, if we need a wee, and that's those deep feelings inside of us. I bang on about protein. Lots of people will know that if I'm working with them, I want to check out if their child has had sufficient protein for their breakfast, particularly, because that's a fairly solid fuel. I talk about that being coal rather than kindling. And if your fuel tank in your car's filled up, you're not driving down the motorway going, ah, the lights on, the lights on. And then you can't focus on anything else. So the vestibular, the proprioception, it may not figure in quite the same way, but I think we need to be aware of that hunger factor too. And with all those changes at Christmas, things are not as predictable. And I would like to go on to a story which I learnt from a mum of a little boy who was about 3. not diagnosed, but with autism spectrum type challenges, lots of anxiety. I was running one of my courses on boys, and she was sharing with me that this time of year, Christmas was terrible for her because they always had to go and get a tree as a family. And every time they went to the same place. Every time their little boy had a meltdown, and it was such an unhappy experience for him. And we did lots of work in the course looking at understanding. These days, I talk about every boy, every child, every individual. We don't label children by their gender. This happened to be a little boy. And she reflected on the things that we'd been learning in our course and some of those sensory needs, some of those triggers, some of those anxieties. And she didn't tell me she was going to do it. She came back to our session the week after and was so thrilled that she had taken her son to go to buy the Christmas tree and see Father Christmas, and it had been fabulous. And then we talked about what had she done. And it was this story that made me choose to do this title for the course, the anticipation bit. She'd anticipated what the triggers might be for him because she'd seen them the previous year. She sees them throughout the year. And she had gone to do a recce trip, as teachers are used to do. We have to go and check out the risks and hazards beforehand. And she had gone to this place where you buy Christmas trees, and she'd talked to the managers and she'd shared some of these difficulties. And they agreed that her family, and she did have more than one child, but the whole family could go at 8:30 on a Saturday morning rather than at 9 o'clock when it began, to this place where you pick your own Christmas tree. And at that time, the music wouldn't be on. The reindeer would be in their pen, but there wouldn't be queues of children all around the reindeer. Father Christmas, they would plan, would be there, but Father Christmas would not be part of a queue or, oh, let's go and see Father Christmas. The child could approach Father Christmas if they chose to or not, or completely ignore him. And they would get to go to the field with their saw and their muddy wellies and go and saw down that Christmas tree with nobody else around. This mum had tears of joy in her eyes, and she thanked the other people in the course because you always learn from other people, not just the person leading. And she thanked me and she said, I cannot thank you. This has started our Christmas in such a positive way. And I will now use anticipation of what might happen and how those things might trigger my child. We're getting close to the end. I'm going to ask you for your reflection on that, Philippa, and if you've got any reflections on that, and then we will give a couple of tips each for people to take
Fine.
away.
So the anticipation, sort of the strategy, if you like, for the anticipation is what she did, which is preparation. So it's preparing herself and her family in order to give her family a positive experience. And so increasing preparation for me is quite an important one. That is actually cognitive, that's mind as well as body. And some of the triggers that can come actually are from if people can have a think about people and environment. So where they're going, for instance, you know, if it's noisy, if it's busy, can they do a recce beforehand? I tell you what's incredibly useful is Facebook or going on a website. So more often than not, one of my children finds it difficult to remember faces. If you say a name and a face, they won't remember. So what's brilliant is you just say in the morning when you're sitting down at breakfast and you're saying, right, this is what we're going to be doing. You show a picture of the person and the house if you're going to their house. And that can make a huge difference. I mean, no one knows. You can't qualitative analyze actually what differences it does make, but it's very, very simple and very quick. It's not a huge preparation. And people, they're all of us have people within our family that are wonderful with our children, and then that those that possibly are not, or they'll have will have a family friend that is very traditional or, and I think it's important you can choose to avoid, which is no, it'll be too hard work if they're there. That's fine. Or you can just simply increase your preparation with your child. And that is where I'm coming on to my specifics. If you've got a
That's
child of
fine.
a younger age, you can possibly build a like a little fort for them, or have a little tent or an area of retreat that they can go. And the other thing is, I used ice cubes as an example, but having ice cubes in the freezer that your child can go into, again, it would be very, very useful. And the most important thing is of the connection with the child. So it's reducing the expectation of yourself when you're having a family event. So if you've got a house full of people that are around, increase your preparation beforehand so that you can, it can alleviate the time that possibly may be needed to support your child when you're in the event. Delegate your tasks,
Oh, that's a
and
useful
also
one.
delegation to people that you feel safe with, that won't judge the fact that you have to, will want to go and be with your child to support them. And actually, to reduce the expectations of what it would be nice. It would be nice to have, to have fun with my friends. It would be nice to play that board game. But also to say, actually, to look at a new objective, which is that of a positive experience as a family. And I think that's a tough one, but I have to say it gives you far more joy than possibly that of playing that board game whilst your child is struggling. And a tip would be to just maybe have, if you're going to do a board game and your child will find that difficult, then settle them beforehand. Settle them for 10 minutes and then say that mummy's going to be doing, or daddy's going to be doing this. At least then they know that they're safe, they're settled, and that so you can enjoy what
That's
you want to do.
fabulous. That is that anticipation again, isn't it?
Yes.
Anticipating that
Yeah.
situation. He won't be happy if I'm playing the board game, therefore I'll invest that time. And that's your anticipation and your connection. That's fabulous. Thank you so much, Philippa. The two things that I would
No
like to
problem.
leave you with are that in your anticipation, using your fingertips, and there are no visuals on this, so if you take your hand and take your middle finger, make it horizontal, it's the longest journey. It's a bumpy road. And if you start at your hand and go down to the bump, thinking about what's tricky and how can you tackle it. What might be tricky on your trip to buy the Christmas tree? What might be tricky when mum wants to play a board game? What might be tricky when the vicar comes calling? All sorts of things, but things for your children. So, what's tricky and how did you tackle it? That's on the middle finger of the fingertips talking together tool. And one thing, when you're using this fingertips tool, you wouldn't actually ask your child just coldly, what's tricky and how do you tackle it? You would usually couch that with something that they're particularly proud of. So start with success. Over the Christmas period, decide which of the ingredients you're going to take away from the wonderful cocktail recipe, call it what you will, that Philippa's shared with us tonight. But know something that your child is particularly proud of, and that's your thumbs up. What makes them shine inside? And help them to know what that is. And to celebrate that over the Christmas period so they get the opportunity to show their picture to someone if they choose to, or to give them one of the cakes that they've helped to make if they choose to. They need to hold the controls in that. Thank you so much, Philippa. I have learnt loads tonight. We must
You're very welcome.
connect more often.
We must, definitely.
I'm fascinated because I have had and I didn't tell Philippa this before I invited her. I've had international experts on this podcast. I've had British experts on this podcast. And when I was speaking to Jules, my lovely PA, and she said, I can't find a blurb for Philippa. I can't find her CV. I can't find her on LinkedIn for this. I said, there's a reason for that, because Philippa is a lived, experienced expert. And I hope I can invite you again
Like
in 6 months or a year's time, but the conversation you and I have had tonight is absolutely on a par with those that I have had with the international experts. So thank
it.
you so much. And thank you to all of
You're
you
very welcome.
for joining us, whether you're joining us live tonight or whether on the podcast. This has been our Talking Together Tuesday, talking together, learning together, growing together, with your children, but with our lovely guest, Philippa Aldous, and with me, Ali McClure. Thank you so much.